And welcome back to another episode of The Book Stop. I'm your host, Jen, and I'm very excited to talk about today's episode. But before we begin, there will be spoilers as we talk about major events that unfold within the story. In addition, each episode will have a list of trigger warnings in the description. Be sure to follow the podcast on Instagram at The Book Stop Podcast and show your support on Patreon for early access to episodes and other additional content. And welcome back to another episode of The Book Stop. We are here today with the one and only amazing, astonishing Anastasia.
Oh, you could have kept going. I would have loved that.
I was going to go with like all A's. I couldn't think of
that. Fair.
Anastasia, what do you have for us to talk about?
Today I brought Crazy Rich Asians by Kevin Kwan. I brought this book because, well, first I love the movie. And then when I saw the movie, I was like, whoa, this is a book. I got to read this. And then I read the book a couple years ago, and I was like, oh, this is pretty good. And then my wonderful friend Jen was like, I got this podcast, and, you know, it just worked.
It's not standalone, it's actually a trilogy, which I was very surprised about. And kind of sad that the movie didn't continue on. It got halted because of, like, COVID, so they never really came back to it.
Mm-hmm.
Also, this is a book podcast. I will be the first to say it is a book podcast, but we are going to talk about the movie, I think, a decent amount.
Yeah, I feel like it plays a big part in, like, just the fact that it's different from the book.
Yeah.
So it's a big effect on how you read the book, especially if you've seen the movie, which we both have, so.
Exactly, yeah. I definitely think this is the type of book where if you've seen the movie first, you're not going to like the book. But if you read the book first, you're going to hate the movie.
Yeah, so, I 100% agree, yeah.
Yeah, and I think we are both on the saw the movie first boat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we are going to talk about the movie a lot. If that's not your thing, then get the heck out of here. But if you don't mind, here we go.
And go watch the movie if you haven't.
Oh, please watch the movie. But before we begin, we are going to play a little game. You are going to summarize this book in 30 seconds. And whenever you're ready, you may begin.
Okay, so this book covers Rachel Chu and her boyfriend, Nicholas Young, and their trip to Singapore to visit his family for his best friend's wedding. And it kind of delves into the whole backstory of Rachel meeting his family for the first time and how crazy and rich his family is. And it gives a lot of backstory into just, like, how these people live their lives. And it follows multiple stories at the same time, but mainly they're the focus in the book.
Honestly, sums it up perfectly. I'm going to summarize it for anybody who hasn't heard of this book. And again, we're only going to cover the first book in the trilogy. When Rachel Chu agrees to spend the summer in Singapore with her boyfriend Nicholas Young, she envisions a humble family home, long drives to explore the island, and quality time with the man she might one day marry. What she doesn't know is that Nick's family home happens to look like a palace, that she'll ride in more private jets than cars, and that with one of Asia's most eligible bachelors on her arm, Rachel might as well have a target on her back. Initiated into a world of dynastic splendor beyond imagination, Rachel meets the Young family, including Eleanor, Nick's formidable mother, a woman who has very strong feelings about who her son should or should not marry. Yeah, let's hop right into it. So in this book, what would you say is your favorite quote?
My favorite quote is honestly pretty early on in the book, before really a lot of stuff happens. Eleanor has a long-held theory about men. She truly believed that for most men, all that talk of being in love or finding the right one was absolute nonsense. Marriage was purely a matter of timing, and whenever a man was finally done sowing his wild oats and ready to settle down, whichever girl happened to be there at the time would be the right one. It just seems very true, and I've never seen it written out like that, and I was like, wow, that was mind-blowing. Very true, very true. And I feel like you can see that in not even just Chinese culture or rich culture, but in most culture, especially with men, it's just like time and place is very important for them.
Absolutely. This is actually one of my talking points. Yeah. One thing I wanted to go over was like the right one versus the right time.
Mm-hmm.
This story definitely goes over both, where Nick and Rachel think that it was the right one.
Mm-hmm.
Like they have found the one that they're going to marry. While Eleanor believes that it's not the right time and that obviously somebody out there is better for Nick.
Yeah.
And that he's kind of, quotation marks, settling for Rachel when she knows that there's somebody out there that's more rich, I guess, or more influential than Rachel is.
Oh, yeah, definitely. He has more manners or knows more about their culture, knows how to drink tea, that kind of thing.
Exactly. I really love how this book explores the right one versus the right time. It also ties in with the fact that you get to see how everyone meets and how it feels like at moments it is the right time and the right one, but you learn later on, as we explain the book, that it doesn't turn out that way.
Yeah.
But that's a very good quote. That was one of mine as well.
Yeah, I like that one.
So the quote I have is pretty big, so I'm not going to read the whole thing, but it's this chunk that Rachel and Nick are talking about at the end of the book, where Nick has proposed to her, and Rachel's like, it doesn't make sense for us to get married, let's just break up at this point, because I'll never be good enough for your family.
Yeah.
And she says, okay, again, I'm not going to read the whole, because it's a whole paragraph. I'm just going to pick up the part that I like. And she says, you see what it's like with my cousins. We're competitive. We tease each other mercilessly.
That's close enough.
How many instances can I get in there? Mercilessly.
Three.
Okay. But at the end of the day, we support each other. That's what I want for my kids. I want them to love their family, but to feel a deeper sense of pride in who they are as individuals. Not in how much money they have, what their last name is, or how many generations they go back to whatever dynasty. I just really love that quote because it shows the boundaries that Rachel is setting. She's not saying that it's okay if they push through and they make this work right now. Later on, it's not going to work because it doesn't just affect her and him. It's going to affect their legacy. It's going to affect their children. And she's just setting that boundary right now and saying that I'm not okay with that. I love the communication that she has. I'm glad that she didn't just like stick up with it and be like, fine, I'll get married with you because I'm in love with you. She's thinking about their future.
Yeah.
Where Nick isn't. He's really just thinking selfishly himself. He's like, I'm happy with you and I want to be with you. He doesn't really think of the outcome. He's like, we'll stay in New York. We'll live there forever. And that's what she says is, and if I marry you, there will be no escaping it, even if we live on the other side of the world.
Yeah.
But if we live in New York, your family's still going to be there.
Yeah, and I think during a portion of that, she talks about how, like, even he said however long we live in New York or something along that lines. Yeah. I mean, it sound like there's no way he's staying there forever. And she's like, well, that's, you know, something I need to think about. And I think that that shows, like, even though he is, like, 32, I think, and she's also in her
30s.
Yeah. Shows kind of how much more immature and how much he doesn't realize the impact of his family on his life versus how she sees it. Kind of feels like, oh, well, it doesn't matter. I can just kind of do whatever and they're just going to stay in their corner of the world. And she kind of realizes that, like, no, they will get on planes and fly across this country to disrupt your life.
Yeah, absolutely. And their own planes,
yeah,
too.
Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. I just love that whole spiel about, that's just like paragraphs of her talking about their future. And
yeah.
I just think it's really well done.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I have one other quote. This is about Miss Astrid. So this is when Astrid finds the receipt from her husband in his wallet from the dinner that he had when he was in Hong Kong. They kind of describe how she reacts, and it goes like this. She wanted to burst into the room and hold the receipt in his face while he was soaking in the tub. She wanted to scream and claw at his skin. But of course, she did no such thing. She breathed in deeply. She regained her composure, the composure that had been ingrained since the day she was born. She would do the sensible thing. She knew that there was no point in making a scene demanding an explanation. Any sort of explanation that could cause even the tiniest scratch on their picture-perfect life. That is very sad, but I think really digs deep as to who she is as a person and who a lot of her family is as a person and, like, how important image is to that family. She's just, like, willing to stay with him after finding, like, now two different accounts of him cheating on her. And she's like, no, no, it's fine. I don't want anybody else to know. I'm just going to keep it to myself and I'll just take a deep breath and get over it. I was like, girl, we are so early into the book. Are you okay?
Astrid is, well, we're going to talk a little bit about Astrid, I guarantee. But yeah, she definitely got, a lot of the women in this book get the short hand of the stick.
Oh, but, man, yeah.
Or short end of the stick.
Which is very accurate, I feel like, to Asian culture, which is, I'm glad it stays true to that, but also just sad.
Yeah, that is really sad, because again, like, image is so important to her. Well, not to her. It's her family, mm-hmm. really. There are moments when she wants to lash out and be angry. And even Michael wants her to do that.
Yeah.
Part of me thinks that he did it for attention.
Oh, 100%. I mean, towards the end of the book, you find out he literally did it for attention.
That's right. Yeah.
He wanted her to, like, throw a fit, and she didn't. She was like, eh, that's cool. Let's keep going on.
Yeah. And in the movie, hints on that a lot, too, when they're in the car. And he's like, I'll never be good enough. Even me cheating isn't enough for you. Mm-hmm. To get angry, which is just pitiful.
Yeah, not a reason, but okay, sure. You want to find any reason.
So what are some things that you liked about this book?
I liked how in-depth the characters went. I like how many characters there are, and I like how we kind of went into all of their stories. Because sometimes it felt like a bit much, and then I would read more and be like, okay, it makes sense that we need to know all these people. Because it kind of, the congestion in my brain while I was reading it, I feel like accounted for the congestion of how Rachel felt meeting all of them. Because
yes.
There are so many people. I'm like, okay, who is this? What family are they part of? What branch of the family? And that's the same way she was feeling as a main character. So I really liked that. I feel like it added to the book, where originally when I started reading it, I was like, this is unnecessary. We didn't know all these people in the movie. Mm-hmm. There's no need for there to be all these characters. So that was one thing I really liked. And then another thing I really liked was the descriptions of everything. Because I don't live a lavish lifestyle in which I know what all these things look and feel like, the in-depth descriptions of everything made it very easy to just envision and put myself in a very luxurious lifestyles. Yeah. But also, it made me feel like I was in Asia, but not in Asia at the same time. It was very cool. I liked that.
My legs kind of ping-pong off that. Mm-hmm. It made me want to go to Singapore so bad.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it is definitely on my bucket list now. Like, the description of the food, it goes into high detail about that. Another thing I really loved was learning about the culture and learning about the languages. A lot of this is, like, half written in the language that they spoke.
Yeah.
There's multiple different languages throughout the whole book.
Mm-hmm.
This is a PSA as well, to get a Kindle. So I recently got a Kindle, and this was the first book I read on there. And I just think it's so cool that I can literally, like, highlight a word, and it'll tell me an entire, like, backstory on it. It will give me, like, a web description of everything
in it. I didn't even think about that. Yeah, that's probably really helpful.
And you click on it, it gives you, like, a little footnote as well. Mm-hmm. And I know the book has it, but you gotta, like, flip.
And there's a lot more to read than just, like, the little, like, sometimes there's really big footnotes. I was like, oh my god, this is, like, half the page.
Yeah, but I'm really glad that he put the footnotes in there, because I thought it was really important. Because a lot of books will just, like, graze over it and won't know what it ever means. But there is a lot of culture in here. A lot of it is kind of, like, right in your face, but a lot of it's a little bit more hidden. You have to do your own research and, like, learn about it on your own.
Mm-hmm.
But I loved learning the languages in there and, like, the common phrases and Alamark.
Alamak.
I was like, I was gonna start saying that. You so much.
Oh, yeah.
But no, I really enjoyed that. And I really love, like you had said, we get everyone else's background and we get everyone's first meeting, which I really liked. I thought that was a really interesting thing to put in, because it's not necessarily needed, but it develops those characters out a little bit more.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now on the flip side, so what are some things that you didn't like about this book?
In the same way I liked all of the characters in the book, sometimes I felt like I got lost in the fact that this was Rachel and Nick's story. Sometimes forgot that they were even on this island at this time. Like, at some point in the book, we went into, like, Picklin's dad and his real estate company and him owning all this property, and I was like, what are we talking about again? I was like, okay, this is why it's important. And I had to bring myself back multiple times. So I feel like just getting lost in their story, because it, like, they are the main reason for this trip, but also, so much of their relationship has to do with what's going on in the background of their life, not really what's happening in front of them, because everybody's so secretive. I don't know, I'm kind of on the fence between that, but I kind of felt lost in their love story, and, like, everybody else's story was equally as important.
Yeah, I definitely 100% agree with you. I think the jumps of perspectives were very confusing on trying to find who the main character even was. We saw the movie, so we know Rachel is technically, quote-unquote, our main character.
Mm-hmm.
But when you go in on the book, it literally doesn't feel like it. It doesn't feel like Rachel is really even an imperative part of this story.
No.
Because it's very rarely told from her point of view.
I mean, we know stuff about her, but we don't really know a lot about her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With the jump of perspective, I want to bring up chapter 7. So chapter 7 was the phone call between Eleanor and Astrid. Mm-hmm. Where she's like, oh, so do you know about this Rachel? And obviously Astrid knows Rachel. She's met her already.
Yeah.
And in the phone call, it jumps from Eleanor, and then you hear Eleanor's internal thoughts almost. And then in the middle of the conversation, it jumps to Astrid, and then we hear her internal thoughts.
Yeah.
But the POV of the chapter is Eleanor. Mm-hmm. So it was very weird of how it just flips right in the middle of a paragraph. That was very confusing to follow because, again, whose side am I supposed to be on? When I see everyone's side, it's cool. It's nice to have that detail.
Yeah.
But when you're trying to tell a story, it's not necessarily imperative to show everyone's personal thoughts mm-hmm. on one topic.
I think it made it feel like a never-ending story. Like, because it's a big family. He could have kept going on and on and on and on, and on about yeah. this family, and I would have kept reading it, but he could have just kept going on for way longer than what this book is, and mm-hmm. I would have gotten lost in all of the history and all of everything that's going on.
Yeah, absolutely. Another thing I didn't like, so you had mentioned that you really liked all the connections. I think there was a lot of just name drops and connections outside of the family that didn't really matter in the long run.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, it makes sense because you're trying to show how imperative that these connections are, how important that the young family is.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're telling me six different names of a product that someone's giving them or a jet or something, yeah. and then you never mention again, I honestly found myself just skipping over a lot of those. And oh my God, parentheses. Holy parentheses. Dude. They were everywhere.
Yeah.
Every page had at least six of them. And I'm not saying six individual, six is a set. It broke up the flow of the story so bad. And it was in with those connections, usually.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was using it as, like, explaining something, but it just broke up the flow of the story so much that I did not like it.
Yeah, I agree. I feel like also just because it is, like, there is so much culture shock in the book that I did find myself multiple times having to reread and go back and be like, okay, wait, what are we, talking about a dish? Are we talking about a place? Are we talking about,
yeah.
what are we talking about?
So let's just get into the meat of it. The book versus the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Again, we had said that if you like one, you're not going to like the other.
Mm-hmm.
We came from the movie to the book, and I recently rewatched the movie, too, as I was reading it.
Mm-hmm.
And I hate to say this. I really do. I feel so bad.
Dun, dun, dun.
The movie was so much better. It was so much better.
She said it.
I'm so sorry. I feel icky. But yeah, and here's why, okay?
I'm sure I know why, but go ahead.
A rant here. There was a very prominent main character. Mm-hmm. They gave us the reason, they gave us the why, and they gave us the action. They just did what they're supposed to do.
Yeah.
A very clear set path. With the book, it feels like it's just going all over the place. I just couldn't find that main drive other than, oh, Rachel's not good enough for this family.
Yeah.
And there's even parts where we don't really even see that.
No. No, not at all.
A lot of people are like, oh, we really like Rachel. We really don't care. And there's not enough drive from Eleanor.
Because she's not there half the time.
She's not there. Exactly.
Yeah. I was so shocked by that. I was like, wait, why did I feel like she was in this way earlier than I thought?
Yeah.
And then the first time they meet is like 3/4 into the book. And I was like, what?
Yeah, wow. Exactly. Eleanor is very reserved mm-hmm. and very stern in the movie, but in the book, she's kind of emotional.
Yeah, and also, like, she's, like, got more opinion, and she's more vocal about her opinion, I feel like. And also, they make her seem more youthful in the book. In the movie, she's, like, wise and old. In the book, she seems more youthful and, like, opinionated about her son's future.
Yeah, and more vocal about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because in the movie, she was, like, vocal, but I feel like she kept it with a close-knit people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, her son, and maybe, like, people in her family.
Yeah, like, a couple of aunties, and that's it.
Yeah, yeah. In the book, she was telling everybody. She was like, I don't like this Rachel girl. And I'm just like, bruh.
Yeah.
Obviously, the book gives you a lot more
mm-hmm.
with everybody, which I loved. I really liked learning more about Astrid and even, like, Eddie and Fiona's relationship, which the movie doesn't go into, like, hyper detail.
But they hint at it a lot in that movie.
They do. But Boo, Eddie, okay? Boo.
Yeah, literally.
Because he was so mean to her.
I mean, he's just mean to everybody. Oh, wow.
Yeah. Like, when that conversation where he got something on his shirt, I think, or she got something on her shirt.
Yeah.
And the way he was talking to her, I was just like, ew?
Well, do you remember the part where he almost hit his kid?
Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, whoa.
Yeah, and Nick's like, are you seriously gonna hit your kid with me saying right
yeah.
here?
Over a shirt?
Like,
and his wife says that too. She's like, dude, like, seriously? Over this? You're gonna hit your kid? Come on.
Yeah, no, I didn't love it. Another thing I really liked that the movie did was how she finds out about her dad. In the movie, obviously, we had the wedding, which I was very shocked of the lack of wedding in this book.
Oh my god, right?
That is the buildup.
Like, it's not the same aesthetic type of wedding, because the reception is, like, high tea, Mad Hatter themed. And in the movie, it's Great Gatsby themed, so I was so confused.
Isn't it on a boat, too?
Yeah.
And then this movie's on a skyscraper or something?
Yeah.
I was like, oh, different scene.
Exactly.
Yeah, I was very shocked by the lack of wedding, because I was thinking the downfall is when Eleanor tells Rachel about her father during the wedding, or reception, I guess, is a better word. But no, in the book, we don't get that until they go on their little trip together, and she shows up.
Yeah, exactly. And also, like, what was that random trip?
It was like he wanted to get away from all the drama.
Yeah, but, like, how did they, because they didn't go on a trip in the movie, right? No.
No, because she...
That just happened at the wedding, yeah.
Yeah, it happened at the wedding, and then she stayed at Biglin's house.
Yeah, so they kind of skipped that whole... going to the, like, going on a vacation park from the book in the movie, because she goes to Piglin's house, but there's so much they cut out, which was so important. They needed to cut it out.
Yeah.
They streamlined it very well.
Yeah. With them going, it took away, because we have the drama at the wedding, because it's like, that's the big rise of the story, is like, they go to the wedding, it happens, and also in the book, they're there for the whole summer, but in the movie, they're only there for a week. Which I thought was, like, very interesting.
Yeah.
I did like that they were there for the whole summer. It wasn't so fast-paced as the movie is. I don't want to talk about the ending too much, because we're going to have a whole segment about the ending. Mm-hmm. But with them going on the trip, I feel like it pulled them out of the craziness of the story, which felt like a climax of the story. And then it downfalled a little bit with them going, and then it goes right back up again.
Yeah, exactly. It was kind of unlikely that randomly his grandma would just show up.
Right! How did they get her out of the house?
How did you... How'd you even make it here? It was like a 4-hour drive.
Yeah, on a cliffside. That's very dangerous.
Exactly.
Like, why would you bring your grandma?
For the head of a family that's worth this much money, absolutely not. She should just be in FaceTime. A bubble.
Just FaceTime, grandma.
Exactly. Eleanor's the only one who really needed to be there.
Yeah, I think it was for, you know, the drama.
Mm-hmm.
Like, get it on a note. And just say, Grandma doesn't
approve. Grandma said, no.
Okay, so in the book, we don't get any setup of Rachel's perspective of finding out about Nick's family. In the movie, we get to see everything kind of slowly come unraveled, because Nick doesn't tell her anything, really.
Yeah.
And we get to see, like, her perspective of it, which supports her later yelling at him for not preparing her for it. While in the book... because we jump around so much, we don't really get to explore that realization from Rachel's side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And I mean, even just like so much of the book that they're spent apart, it doesn't lend to how angry she was. Because it's not like they even had time to talk to each other about it. Because they weren't really together. I mean, like, in the movie more so, like, they did dinner at the house, and then they did the dumpling making. And there was a lot of time where they were, families were together. Spending time, wherein in the book, it was like, oh, well, this family member's on this island, and this family member's over here, and this person's doing this, and she's in China, and I was like, so nobody's really getting to know each other right now. The book itself is all, like, speculation on the fact that they don't like Rachel, coming to the fact that, yeah, no, we don't like her, in, like, the last couple bit where we meet her, whereas the whole movie, I feel like, is all about, okay, we don't like her because she's here, and we see her, and we don't like her, period.
Absolutely. That's kind of what I want to talk about, was, like, the dumpling making scene is so important, because we get to understand that Eleanor was in the same position that Rachel is in.
Yeah.
And a little bit there, she's trying to protect her.
Mm-hmm.
She's trying to say, like, hey, I was in this position where I wasn't good enough, and it still haunts me to this day because I'm still not good enough.
Yeah, look at how much I've sacrificed just to be here.
Yeah, and then we get the ring about how, this is again the movie, we never got the ring from Grandma, then her husband made the ring for her. And then at the end of the movie, she gets that ring from Eleanor, showing that she's finally accepted.
And then I cry every time.
It's so good. You don't get that in this
book. That I feel like just breaks my heart. I get it though.
Yeah.
That's the hard thing, is like I criticize the movie and then I'm like, okay, I want more. I want to read the book. Because that was the main reason I read the book, is because I left that movie going, I need more background about these characters. Mm-hmm. There is way more going on than these like 10 scenes that just happened in this movie in an hour and 45 minutes.
Yeah.
I know there is. And then I read this book and I'm like, ah, this is a little too much. I didn't want to know this much.
Yeah.
So I feel like there's definitely an even medium, and this is too much, and the movie's not enough. Yeah. I'm like, I need a little bit more, a little bit less, and we'd be perfect.
Absolutely. Like, when I was watching the movie, during the credits, I had purchased all three books and was currently cashing out as the credits were finishing.
Yeah.
Who in this one would you say is your favorite character?
That's a hard one because there are so many. But I think my favorite character, and sadly it's not the main character, but it's Astrid. Mm-hmm. I think she's the most complex and dynamic character with the best developed backstory, the best explained backstory onto how she got to where she is with Michael, what's going on in their relationship, how she meets Charlie again, and like her whole storyline of her relationship, it makes the most sense throughout the whole book. And it's the only one I can really truly follow. Whereas like Rachel and Nick, I get why they're there and it's like such a small portion, but we get so much of Astrid's relationship and I just love that. It's my favorite part.
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially just because of how sad it is, which is sad, but I like sad stories, so.
Yeah. It definitely felt like Astrid was Kevin's favorite character.
Oh, 100%. She's just drop-dead gorgeous and rich and has all the money in the whole wide world.
Yeah. I also like Astrid. I think she's a crowd favorite. Mm-hmm. I think her job is to get people to like her.
Yeah.
That's literally what she does. She's such a kind human being. Mm-hmm. And to have such a kind human being to get such a crappy life.
Yeah.
It's just so sad. Like, she deserves so much more than what she gets. Mm-hmm. And I'm hoping that with Charlie.
I just don't know if he's gonna come back. Well, I mean, we're gonna save that for a different part of the podcast, but.
Yeah, we shall see.
Because he did some things.
Yeah. It's like, it's so hard to find a different character in there that you really like because she's so developed.
Yeah, she's so vibrant. I was like standing there like trying to figure out like, okay, who's another character I really, really liked? I'm like, I could say I liked Eleanor, but like she only did so much for the story. I'm like, I only know so much about her. Nobody really sticks out as much as she does.
Yeah. So the next thing I want to talk about is some characters individually. Let's talk about Nick for a second. What are your thoughts? Because I have some thoughts.
On Book Nick?
Yeah, on Book Nick.
Book Nick is kind of dumb.
Okay, yeah. he's kind of dumb, and he's a little flat.
Yeah, why do you like him? I hate to say it, but, like, he doesn't seem like a very, I mean, he seems like a good friend. You can see, like, with Colin how good of a friend he is.
Yeah.
How was he able to keep that a secret from you for so long, his whole life and backstory, and he was just able to lie to you this whole time, and you just were like, yeah, I like him, he's cute and fun. Let's keep going.
Exactly.
Even though I don't know his whole family or anything about his past.
Speaking of the relationship, I really liked the detail of how Rachel and Nick got together. Yeah, of how, like, she didn't want to date an Asian man.
Mm-hmm.
How her friend kind of, like, set her up. Mm-hmm. I thought that was a really cool detail. Yeah, Nick just felt a little flat. I don't know if it's just because he wasn't in it much.
Yeah.
Did we get any POVs of Nick?
Maybe when he was on the bachelor trip.
Oh, yes. That was the only one.
And that was really just showed me, yeah, he's pretty flat as a character. Yeah. Not much happened while he was by himself and going on in his own head. Not much.
Colin and his relationship, and a little bit of, like, Astrid is in there, too. Mm-hmm. So much detail could have been given to that. Like, so much background on Nick's side of why is he, quotation marks, rebelling against his family.
Exactly. And would he actually, like, leave for good and put it all behind him? Like, he doesn't talk to anybody about that.
Yeah.
Ever.
Obviously, in the movie, we get them on the dock where they're fishing, and he's talking about marrying Rachel.
Yeah.
And if she could do it. I wish it was more of that emotional expression from Nick's side.
Mm-hmm. Does feel like he's just flitting around the whole book going, no, they're fine. No, you're going to like her. No, my family's great. No, you're going to like her. That's why it felt like his only purpose during the whole story was to be an advocate for both sides. Be an advocate for his parents and also advocate for Rachel.
Yeah. We love just using men for plot.
There we go. Perfect.
Isn't that what we talked about in our last podcast?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, because the only characters that were good were women.
Yeah, we did Haunting of Hill House, and we talked about how the men were just there for plot. That's it.
I guess we're on a theme now. We have to do books that are men are only there for plot.
Oh, God. Yeah, and another character was Piglin. I have to say it. I liked her way better in the movie.
Oh, my gosh, me too. Awkwafana just brings that character to life. I mean, even the way they describe her in the book, like her appearance, nothing like what Awkwafina is. And nothing like what you would assume the personality would come out of that character would be. And so that's why I was like so confused as to how she was like this other half to Rachel, because she doesn't give that opposite personality to Rachel.
Exactly.
She seems very into their whole lifestyle. She's all about it. She wants to know who Nick is. She wants to know why they have so much property. She's a VP in her dad's company. Like, she's in that lifestyle. Whereas Piglin on the movie, not in that lifestyle, would very much show fine with being completely Americanized and not doing anything that other people want her to do.
Exactly. Awkwafina did an amazing job. Oh, that whole cast really killed it. They did so amazing cast with that family. Awkwafina did such a great job bringing, like you said, that character to life. She, in the book, was a little boring. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
But she was. If you were to ask me my favorite character of the movie, it would be her.
Yeah.
Because she's so animated and so, like, out there. While in the book, she's just kind of, I feel bad saying this, she's a little bit of, like, a chauffeur. She just kind of drags her around a little bit.
But I was so mad when she didn't get out and go to the party with her. Yeah. I was like, what? What's going on? Okay. Oh, also, I forgot a whole other...
Go.
The drop of Oliver in that... In this book, he's nowhere near what he is to the Rachel in the movie.
Yeah.
He's like that right-hand man to like teach her the ways, show her the people, give her the outfits. And he falls flat in this book. He's like nowhere to be seen. And so the first time that I really heard Oliver's name towards the end when she was like going to get her clothes, I was like, oh my gosh, Oliver, finally.
Yeah.
But then I was like, oh, not my Oliver. Who's this?
Yeah. And like, I didn't even get any like... You know, Rainbow Sheep vibes from
No Rainbow Sheep vibes at all. Besides the fact that he picked out our outfits, but like...
Yeah, kind of messed up.
Yeah.
yeah, he was just there to get Kitty to go for...
Bernard.
Bernard, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But going back to Piglin for a second, my biggest confusion when I was reading this was why didn't the family know who Nicholas Young was?
I felt the same way. I was so confused for the longest time, and then they tried to explain it to the fact that, like, very quiet family, mm-hmm. but I was like, that's not enough. If they're the richest family on this whole island who own half of Singapore, people know who they are.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, they do. And then at first I thought it was because his last name was Young, and then I thought it was Leong, and then I was like, oh, he changed it. And I was like, no, that's a different family name. So I was getting really confused, but I was like, no, this isn't how.
So again, the movie.
The movie
describes it so well, because she goes over for dinner. Piglin already knows who, she's like, oh, you're dating Nick Young. Mm-hmm. And then she describes that she's there for a wedding, and you see them all click together as they're like, wait, is that Nick Young?
Yeah.
And she's like, yeah. Mm-hmm. And she's like, why didn't you tell me? And obviously Rachel's like, I didn't know.
Exactly.
And
she loans her an outfit, right?
Yeah.
I don't think, she puts on, like, a very simple dress to go to, like, the first time she goes to his grandma's house. And I was like, this is boring.
At least they put the lilies in there.
Exactly. The tanwas.
Yeah. Moonflower.
I mean, that's basically what it is.
Never, ever said that a movie did better on a character and making them feel more alive than a book does. But this one, I'm sorry.
Right?
I'm sorry.
Yeah. I mean, maybe besides Kitty Pong. Kitty Pong in the book is so crazy.
Yeah,
I was like, oh, I didn't expect this.
Yeah.
But I kind of loved it, so. Okay, this is kind of going back, but one thing I definitely disliked was that bachelor party with the dog fighting.
Oh my god.
What was happening?
Yeah.
I was so confused, and like the gambling and like the women, and I was like, oh, this is quite descriptive and quite vulgar. Can we just skip past this part? I felt like that was vulgar and extra for no reason. I feel like we could have gotten the sense of it being a men's bachelor party without it being the way that it was for as long as it got dragged out.
Yeah. I guess to, like, be the devil's advocate, maybe he was trying to show what Nick would have been into if he would have stayed in Singapore.
That's true.
Or, like, maybe what his future could be. Maybe it's a little foreshadowing. Maybe showing that he doesn't have great influences here.
Yeah, that's true.
Or to see how crazy Bernard or whatever his freaking name is.
Bird.
Can we talk about... Wait. Speaking of a bird. Can we talk about how Nick decides to go back to Rachel because a bluebird was... Because a bluebird was slamming into the freaking window at Colin's house.
Literally.
What?
Was it Colin who came in and told him that was a sign, or was it him who came up with the fact that it was a sign?
It was a mutual sign. I don't know. But yeah, he's like, he stayed at Colin's after Rachel breaks up with him. Colin comes home at honeymoon, and he opens the window, and the bird's just trying to get to this, like, plant or flower.
Yeah.
And he's like, if you just keep going, you'll get to it at the end.
Not the Debbie Ryan. If you just keep going.
If you just keep going, you'll eventually get there. Oh, God. I was like, this? I'm glad they cut that. No one would take that movie seriously.
No.
Oh, God. Okay, let's just continue. I just want to take a second here to shout out some pretty amazing people.
Boop, 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 boop.
Let's give a little shout out to the Patreon subscribers.
Yeah.
We've got our Patreon subscribers are Nick W., Patrick C., Tim M., Ashley A., Janeth P. and Lulu, Bree P., Jack J., Shelby K., Emily P., and Anastasia H.
Thank you guys so much for supporting the podcast. It means the absolute world to me. I enjoy doing this, and I'm glad that some people are listening to it. That's pretty cool. If you guys want to be part of the Patreon shout out, head over to Patreon and we'll subscribe today.
As a Patreon supporter myself, as you heard, I highly recommend.
What are some features that you get with the Patreon?
Oh, you get wonderful unedited episodes of the wonderful behind the scenes of what happens on these podcasts. So you can know everything we think.
Oh, you get to
even hear the things you probably shouldn't know.
You get to hear some wild stuff that we say and all the stuff that I mispronounce. So
you also get a schedule so that you can be ready for whenever the episode comes out and you already have the book read.
Bro, that is true. You're absolutely right. Well, if you want some of these little trinkets. Go ahead and go to Patreon.
Go ahead
and
subscribe. A little wild Tuesday night. Go ahead and do it.
So, who in this one would you say is your favorite relationship?
For some reason, this was really hard for me. Picking a relationship, because there were no, I feel like, two characters that, to me, had a close enough bond that was continuously talked about throughout the book. Mm-hmm. That, like, I could see, like, the character or one character kept coming back to the bond. But I think the most important for me would probably be the relationship between Nick and his mom. Just because she plays such an influential role in his life. I mean, in a way, like, this is really about him and his life and, like, what he's trying to do in it. And she is just such a big part of being there, like, physically when she's there. And also when she's not there, just pulling strings in his life. Mm-hmm. And, like, talking about him behind his back and talking to his ex-girlfriends. Everything that she does. And so I think that that's really interesting. And, like, he has such a respect and such a close relationship with his mom. But at the same time, she kind of feels like she's out to get him the whole time. And she doesn't want him to succeed or be happy. Because it's like, your son's 32. Don't you want him to get married? Don't you not care? Just let him get married and settle down. Like, he just wants to be happy and she doesn't care.
Feels like, you know, a mother and a teenage rebellious son.
Yeah, he doesn't feel 32.
Yeah, he doesn't feel 32. I really wish we got a little bit more out of it. I wish we got a more of a scene with just them alone.
Yeah.
I think we get, like, maybe one.
Maybe.
I can understand Eleanor to the sense of she wants what's best for Nick, but she doesn't approach it in a correct manner.
No.
And it is more of, like, a selfish, like, I want what's best for the family.
Mm-hmm. Well, she could just be honest and come out and say that and be like, hey, that's not good for the family. And he'd be like, yeah, no, I got it.
Yeah. I have two relationships. I have my favorite, and then I have, like, a special mention. Special mention is definitely Astrid and Nick. I think their relationship is really good. Astrid definitely feels like a sister to Nick, someone that he needs. I'm glad they have each other. I love that he introduces Rachel to her first.
Yeah.
Because he knows that Astrid's very down to earth and, like, a reasonable person.
Mm-hmm.
And I just really love Astrid.
Me too.
Everybody. But my favorite one is Nick and Colin. I think we need to normalize having men be emotional and, like, being okay in, like, a friendship.
Yeah.
Like, they are very, like, what's the word? Emotional seems, I guess, strong. No, they're very emotional. You know what?
No.
We're going to normalize that. They're very emotional with each other in the sense of, like, they talk about stuff.
I feel like that's all that they do with each other is talk about their emotions and how they actually feel about what's going on in their lives.
Yeah. And they talk about Araminta starting that relationship and getting engaged and the wedding and everything. And I loved the scene when he's like, I know how to fly a plane. I'm getting you out of here. Or jet or helicopter, whatever it was.
Yeah.
I'm getting you off this boat during the bachelor party.
Uh-huh.
And he's like, that's my man. I just really liked them. And again, at the ending of how he was there for him. Didn't he, like, leave his honeymoon a little
bit early?
He
came home early, yeah.
Yeah, he came home early.
Because he knew he was sad. Aw, stop. tell me one man you know who would actually do that.
Colin. Let's talk about the ending.
let's talk about it.
Oh, God. What can I say?
The best I could explain it is a train coming to a complete halt.
Yes!
What are you? What?
It's just everyone flying.
We were running so fast. And then we hit a brick wall. And I was like,
okay, I'm so glad we're on the same page. So much information at the end with her dad. It felt what Kevin was going for was a cliffhanger. He wanted a cliffhanger so that way he could continue the trilogy, but it just fell through.
No, because it doesn't even feel like a cliffhanger. It just feels like an unresolved end of a book.
Yeah.
Like, because even though I know that there is more coming, but I know that the second book is more focused on Astrid. But that doesn't say anything compared to how he writes his books, but...
Yeah. From the scene of them going to an island.
Cameron Islands?
Yeah, they go to an island. They see Sully.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, I'll never accept Rachel. She's bad for you.
Yeah.
In her grandma voice.
And Eleanor's standing there with her hands crossed.
Yeah. And she's like, oh my God. And then she passes out. Sorry.
Oh my God, I forgot about that. Yeah, what was that? That felt like a really abrupt, just, okay, end of conversation. She passes out. Yeah. I don't know what else to write. Passes out.
So Eleanor tells her that her dad isn't dead and that he's a prisoner in this cell. And she's like, you know all about it. And Rachel's like, no, I don't know anything. And then she passes out, which honestly, but no, she passes out. And then she's like, I can't. This is too much. Take me home.
It just, the book, especially when it got to the end, got so soap opera-y to me. I was like, this would be a great soap opera. I would love this if it was a long TV series that was on daytime television.
Move over, take our lives.
It would do so good, but.
Yeah. And then she gets back, and then Rachel's mom, Carrie, comes and explains that, no, that man in the cell isn't her dad. It was her ex-husband.
Yeah.
And that her dad was like a friend of some sort.
Her dad was, he lived downstairs below her and her husband. And every time he'd come home and like abuse her, the guy downstairs heard. And then they fell in love because one day she was trying to like run away and he like put her in his apartment.
Yeah.
And then they became friends.
Yeah. It was just too much information all at once. And like, I will devil's advocate again. I understand that you're trying to get to the end of the book. And you're trying to set the next book. So you have to give all this information. But it's literally block by block paragraph.
Yeah.
Just information.
Yeah, yeah. Just
her talking.
Mm-hmm.
And I just didn't like it. And then didn't they, like, try to leave to go somewhere? And then Nick comes?
Well, yeah, because that's what originally happened is, like, she finds out about her dad and then she wants to go to China. And then she tells everybody she's going to go to China to see her dad in prison. Well, also, her mom lives in California. I thought her mom lived in New York with her in the movie, but her mom lives in California in the book. So he flies to California in the book to see her mom and then flies back to Singapore with her mom.
Yeah.
To get her to come here. Whereas in the movie, he just calls her mom and is like, hey, Carrie, can you come here? And she's like, yeah, sure, I'm gonna play now. And she comes over. But no, this one, he literally flies to California, comes back, and then she's there, and then she tells her the whole story, and then she's like, oh, don't go to China. That's not your dad. And she's like, okay, I won't go to China.
Do you think Nick brought that blue jay with him?
It's his pet now.
Just to like, talk to him about his feelings. He's got Colin in one blue jay and the other. it was just too much.
I just don't see why he didn't leave it on a cliffhanger of her going to China. If you had left it at, like, I don't know if I'm gonna go to China to figure out who my dad is and left it there and never had her mom come back in and be like, don't go, blah, 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 and had that be a whole thing at the beginning of the next book, I'm like, that would have made more sense. But it felt like we had a cliffhanger and then he kind of really quickly wrapped it up in 10 pages. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, well, what?
Or maybe even, like, the mom steps through the doorway.
Yeah, yeah.
Or something.
Mm-hmm.
Just having all that information, which is vital information.
Very important.
It's so important.
Yeah.
And you have it at the end of the book, felt so rushed.
It does. Because, I mean, like, for like, the information that she's giving her about her being abused, her having a previous husband, her having an illegitimate child, her coming from China, that's a lot of new stuff to give to a person. You think she waited her whole life to tell her daughter all of this, or you don't think that she, like, her daughter ever questioned in her life, like, her past, or, like, who her dad was? Because, I mean, like, I guess they wrap it up, like, oh, your dad died in China. I don't know. I guess it depends on the kind of secrets that her mom kept as a kid growing up. I feel like it doesn't cover that whole.
Yeah, because she had said that when she asked, her mother always, like, shot her down. It was like, oh, you know, he died.
Yeah.
But you don't even want to know your dad's name.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
You didn't ask any of that. Like, you didn't ask your mother anything about her past.
Or, like, his family members, where they're from, like, anything about that. Like, his grandparents. Because obviously in, like, Chinese culture, it's very important, your family and where you come from. So it would just make sense that she would be interested in who her dad's parents were and where they're from in China and all that kind of stuff. Because she knew originally where she was from and where her whole family's from. and where mm-hmm. her mom was from. So it was clearly important to her to some aspect, just not to, like, the terms of money.
I do like that, to give the book something, I do like it didn't end with their engagement.
Yeah.
Like the movie did.
The movie was like a perfect rom-com. And this is like a soap opera. And yeah. those are two very different things. There's way more drama in this mm-hmm. book than there is in that movie. That movie is like, there's some drama in it, but then it gets tied up in a nice sweet bow and you're very happy for them at the very end. I don't know if I should be happy for them at the very end of this book.
Yeah. It felt like, it kind of felt like the movie was just one and done. I don't know if they ever signed up to do more movies or agreed to do any more movies. It felt like Eleanor accepts.
Yeah.
So then this is the end.
Yeah. And so, the only thing they could do is a movie about Astrid. That's like the only place that I felt like they left an open ending in the movie, at least, yeah. is for them to do a sequel about Astrid.
Yeah.
So
when Mike Chang came on yeah. screen, I was like, oh, we're watching Glee now? Speaking of Charlie.
The end of their relationship, it makes me wonder how much of a role he's going to play in her future, because he had advised all of his financial advisors to buy out Michael's company and then to buy a bunch of stocks and shares in his name and then to, you know, do all this stuff so that he's set up financially so that he can support Astrid. Mm-hmm. And I was like, why are you doing that? It just didn't make any sense to me. I'm like, for who he was as a character and the backstory that we got about him, and like, I get that they used to be together and they almost got married and they didn't get married, and so like, and they haven't seen each other, but now they're friends and he wants her to be happy. But why?
Love. Love.
But
you wouldn't do all that for Astrid?
Oh, I would. You're right. You're right. Okay, fair. Yeah, I feel like he definitely put that in there specifically to see how that plays out.
He's
going
to see how it plays out. Yeah.
Because I think that's going to definitely lead to something in the next book, is the fact that he put all this money into Michael's company. I bet he's going to find out some way, somehow, and then he's going to be mad that Astrid's ex put all this mm-hmm. money. Because money's yeah. already his issue with his image. Why would you throw more money at a man who has an issue with money?
That's what I was going to say, is that it's going to get back to Michael. He's going to have a field day yeah. about it being Charlie that's doing this. I don't know the extent of how much he knows about Charlie. I'm yeah. assuming that he has an idea.
Yeah, right?
But I don't know the full extent of it. I don't like Michael. I understand where he's coming from, but I also just hate him.
Yeah, he sucks. Yeah. Literally the worst.
Where's Philip?
Honestly,
Batman.
Let's talk about that. While we're at the end of the book.
Yeah.
The man who's completely lost in every story. The book and the movie.
Not even mentioned.
No.
I thought he died. No, he's alive. Chilling in Australia. Just fishing.
Just fishing. And also, like, I thought he worked in Australia. Then I read the book. He's like, nah, I specifically don't work in Australia. And I was like, oh, slay. Okay, cool. Love that for you. I'm like, oh, so you just stay there because you hate your wife and your mother? Good job.
Yeah. Dip out on all responsibilities. He's doing it right. He's doing it right.
And then the only real, for some reason, the most vivid image of his character is like when Nick comes in the room and wakes him up for dinner. I'm like, you don't question the first time you've seen your son in like 4 years. He just wakes up and he's like, oh, is it time for dinner? You haven't seen this kid in fucking 4 years, and that's his girlfriend you've never met standing in the doorway.
He probably thought that was like one of the maids. He's like, why are you in uniform?
Oh, man.
Like, SpongeBob meme is like, why aren't you in uniform?
I think that the fact that he was left out of the movie shows how unnecessary of a character he was in this book.
Yeah.
He played no important purpose.
No, not
He
at
has
all.
No voice. He wears no pants in his relationship.
I mean, it kind of shows that the women are in charge of the family.
Oh, yeah.
Men are more like the face, I guess, and the women are behind the scenes doing everything.
They orchestrate who's a part of this family.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you want to play a game?
I would love to play a game.
Ooh. I have a list of characters, and I have their careers, their occupations. So I'm going to give you the occupation, and you're going to tell me which character thrives in that occupation.
Okay.
Who does the occupation. So we're going to start with soap opera star.
That would be Miss Kitty Pong.
Mm-hmm. Engineer.
Charlie Wu?
Mm-mm. That's Philip Young.
He's an engineer?
Apparently.
Clearly fell so short as a character, I didn't even know what his job was, even though he makes all of their money.
Pediatric surgeon.
Is it Edison Chang?
No.
No?
It's Sophie. Tech company.
That's Michael Teal.
No. Charlie Wu.
Okay.
Economics professor.
I know this one. Rachel Chu.
Yep.
Yay.
Startup company.
That's Michael Tao.
Mm-hmm.
That's why, because I kept thinking tech startup. So that's why I thought tech.
Charlie's like a, like his business is like there.
Oh,
like
he's already got a tech company. It's not a startup. Huge. It's already a tech company.
Banker.
That's Edison Chang.
Yep. Movie business, like director.
Alistair Chang.
Mm-hmm. History professor.
Nick Young. Mm-hmm.
Real estate agent.
The one and only Carrie Chu.
Yay, you win!
Yay!
A blue jay! All right. What are some things that you would have done differently if you were writing this book? And it's just purely your own opinions. Personally, I would have gone with three solid POVs. Maybe Rachel, because it's more of an outside perspective. Astrid and Eleanor. Those are the only three I would have done. Mm-hmm. And then everything else be like the addresses in part three, where... In part three, we get the place that they're at, and then it jumps around perspectives. Yeah. Have you ever read Salem's Lot?
Yeah.
Okay, so mm-hmm. it's like Salem's Lot.
Yeah.
How we have POVs, and then we have Salem's Lot, mm-hmm. where it jumps around many, many different people in the town. That's what should have been done here.
Oh, yeah, that's a very good point, yeah.
Yeah, so we get Eleanor's perspective of her finding out about Rachel's family, we get Rachel finding out about Nick's family, and then we get Astrid, who's the best character. And yeah. it's a little bit more organized and a little bit more neatly kept.
Yeah.
And then you just stick with those point of views mm-hmm. in those perspectives, because that's what a point of view is. You stick with one person. The only missed opportunity that I had was that I really would have liked more... structured and organized point of view system where I can understand what's going on.
I feel like, I guess mine is the same thing. The most I can really just say is, like, I wish that this story was a little bit more streamlined with more events that stick out in the story that show, like, a beginning, middle, and end of a story. Because, like, it is still supposed to be a book, and I'm really missing that basic beginning, middle, and end of a story.
Yeah.
But in the movies, I do feel like they streamlined that down way too much. They're, like, they jumped from event to event to event to event with no background on how they got there, how anybody was feeling, or what's going on. Whereas we got some of that backstory, but then we also got so much backstory that we didn't need. So they could cut all that. Be great. Yeah.
Again, like, so many names that just didn't matter.
Places.
Yeah. And I'm not saying characters, like Astrid's jewelry dealer, pretty much.
Yeah.
Like, it was, I really liked seeing their relationship when yeah. she came when she was a teenager and was mm-hmm. getting stuff. I really liked that.
You could tell from how she acted yeah. based on her mood and how she was buying things. Like, that was a real relationship. We could have yeah. developed that a little bit more.
So again, this is a trilogy. This is the first book of a trilogy. So what are some predictions that you have for the either the next book or the whole series in total?
The whole series in total is a very good question, because I was thinking about that and I don't really know where the direction of this book could go, because there is so many starting points in this first story. Mm-hmm. There are so many other things that he could choose to elaborate on in two more books, and I just don't know what he's going to choose. Based on what I've kind of read from reading the back of the second book, I know that it's more about Astrid and, like, her relationship with Charlie and that whole thing. Mm-hmm. And so I wonder if maybe we switch to a more Astrid-centered book with, like, Nick and Rachel in the background. But also I wonder, like, with everything that happened in this first book, how are Nick and Rachel gonna go on? Are they gonna be engaged? Did they get engaged?
Not that I remember the last one.
And if this is 10 weeks that they're there, something like that, they're there for a long time. They're there for the whole summer. And, like, I don't think this book covers that entire summer. So I think the rest of the books are gonna go on to cover those hell 10 weeks. And I think she's gonna maybe come into more drama that could bring her back or steer her away for good. I'm not sure. I just, for some reason, just don't see their relationship working out.
Yeah. Like, you want to root for them. Because yeah. they're fighting the system. They're yeah. fighting the man.
Yeah.
Or woman in this.
But Eleanor really is the woman, so.
Yeah. I have no clue how that's going to work.
Yeah.
Okay, so some of my predictions. Okay, obviously the dad's going to come into play.
Mm-hmm.
Rachel's dad, we don't really get a lot about him. So I'm feeling he has to be important in mm-hmm. some way. He has to maybe have a family in China mm-hmm. that maybe is powerful or has money. But then that takes away from, like, Eleanor and Rachel's, like, rivalry. Maybe Eleanor finds another reason why she doesn't like Rachel. More dirt that she digs up.
Because he didn't mention at that fact she had sent him letters when she first moved to America and he never replied to her. You know, it was silent on his end. She never got a reply back. So I feel like that is a very good, like, cliffhanger for, we don't know what he's doing. What is he doing over there?
Yeah, like, what's holding him him back. And maybe they're an arrival with the Young family.
Yeah.
So there's a rivalry between them.
Oh, that'd be fun.
Ooh. Maybe some siblings. Maybe she's got a brother or a sister that we can see a building relationship on that. Because she's an only child and she just really has her mom. Obviously, we're going to get some problems with Rachel and Nick due to someone else. And I'm really interested to see how Astrid's relationship with, like, Charlie. And you know what we didn't talk about?
Hmm.
And the book doesn't talk about? Cassian. Like, why is that kid never mentioned?
Yeah, that's a good point. Because, what, we see her read a story to him once?
Once in the movie.
And I think in the book she reads a story to him in French. Okay, Cassian, what's up? Bye.
I want the third book to be about him. That's my prediction.
We flash forward 20 years.
He's gay.
There we go. We got it.
No, I couldn't tell you what's going to happen in the series. I just know her dad's going to play a part
because
it's the cliffhanger.
Yeah.
So something's got to go on with her dad. They do decide to stay together, and the argument of, like, going to New York or staying here in Singapore, there's going to be some reason he has to come to Singapore.
Yeah.
And then maybe there's finally, like that public image. Mm-hmm. So people, like, outside knows about her now.
Yeah.
And so she has to go to parties and go to public events, and then that's going to get overwhelming for her.
Yeah, at the same point, you got to think about, like, how is she going to go back to New York and have, like, a normal life? Or both of them go back to, you know, New York and have a normal life when they have all of these responsibilities, so to speak, across the world. She's not going to forget about that, because you can tell, like, that's who she is as a character. She cares about all that kind of stuff, and she cares about what his family wants for him. So she's going to make sure that that's important. I feel like that plays a big role, too, in how that's going to work out. But
yeah. And then, like, grandma's going to have to
kick the bucket. Just kidding.
Buy a farm. Take the long sleep. So then there has to be, like, a distribution of who's the head of the family now.
Oh, yeah.
Because Philip ain't gonna do it.
Exactly. And oh, I think it's, oh, you know what? It probably will come to the whole thing of him getting, of whether he's gonna get the family fortune or not. Because it is, a big portion of the book is about him being the heir and getting all of the money and being groomed to be the favorite. Mm-hmm. To see if Rachel can affect that and who actually gets the money would be interesting.
How crazy would it be is if Nick goes on and on about how he doesn't care, and then once it happens and he realizes, oh wait, I need that money, and he leaves Rachel?
Well, I mean, like, in the grand scheme of things, you think about the cousins that they've described in this story who could be getting this family fortune. Why would any of them get that money? Alistair or Eddie or even Astrid. Like, Astrid doesn't need the money. She's not going to be left this, like, entire fortune.
Yeah.
Entire Saul Park. Like, that'd be crazy.
Guess you're going to have to read the book and find out.
I guess you're going to have to read all three of them.
I have to tell you some really bad news.
Some bad news.
It's time to go.
No.
We've drawn to a close. I'll give you a little treat before we go. We're going to do one last thing. We're going to do the rating scale. But we do it a little bit different here on the Bookstop. We make up our own thing. So I would give Crazy Rich Asians by Kevin Kwan 2 Blue Jays Giving Relationship Advice by Slamming Into a Window out of 5.
That's amazing.
So, okay. That's pretty low. I'm sorry. I enjoyed it for what it was. I really wish I would have read it without watching the movie. I think it would have changed my perspective on it. But it just felt like my mouth was full and I couldn't chew. Like, it was just too much.
Yeah.
I do really enjoy the characters. I don't see myself coming back and rereading this book at all. I don't feel myself driving to finish the series either. Like, if I was, like, bored one day and I was like, maybe. But yeah. I'm not running to the next book.
Mm-hmm.
It was good for what it was. It told the story it needed to tell.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. So, I guess for my rating, I would give Crazy Rich Asians by Kevin Kwan 6 Judgmental Tanhua Blooming Flowers out of 10. Because I agree, it was a lot to digest. There was a lot going on in this book. And some part of me can still go back and be, like, devil's advocate from the book and be, like, for what the book is supposed to be and, like, knowing Asian culture and knowing kind of how crazy it actually is and how obsessive they are about their kids' lives and about their money and about everything and, like, just how important it is to them, it makes sense as a book. I can tell what he was trying to get at. As a whole, it makes sense. But then as you're reading it, as a story, it feels like too much. But for the story it's trying to tell, it makes sense. I keep going back and forth on that aspect of it. So yeah.
Yeah, what you said about being a soap opera, I think, would be so good.
Right?
So, even got the vibe, mm-hmm. you know? I think it would be a really good soap opera.
Mm-hmm. Someone needs to pick that up. ASAP.
Thank you so much for coming on. It's always a pleasure having Anastasia on. I don't care if she's not your favorite, she's mine. So.
Thank you so much. I will keep coming back as much as you want to have me.
Well, you're back in Christmas. A little Christmas treat for everybody.
Boop, boop, boop.
Not only do you have a Christmas episode, but we're coming out with a little side
mission. Are we telling them?
Should we tell them?
A little something special?
I don't spoil their Christmas, though.
Oh, true. It could be a really good Christmas present.
We'll just say, we have a pretty big project coming on to the bookstop with my lovely guest, Anastasia. It's a series consisting of 7 books. There's going to be some...
Revelios.
Some Revelios to be revealed soon. A little special treat. I won't go too much into it.
Bring some brooms out of your cupboards.
Yeah.
And...
make some little butterbeer and get ready for a chunky podcast.
Chunky and judgmental.
Let's go. We're ready. If you don't know what any of that means, then that podcast isn't for you. That's okay.
But if you did, you're going to be very excited. Be very excited.
Well, thank you again, and we'll see you next time.
Bye, guys.
Thank you for turning the pages with us today. If you've enjoyed this episode, show your support by leaving a review, sharing the episode, and following the podcast on Instagram at @TheBookStopPodcast. Join us on Patreon for early access to episodes and other additional content. Thank you for listening, and I'm looking forward to the next one. Hope you are too.